Hello and welcome to Iris for Sunday, May 3rd, 2020. I am Trevor Brass and I am bringing you the Sioux City Journal from my home. Let's take a quick look at the weather. Well, today things will be sunny to partly cloudy and warmer. Winds will be from the south-southwest at 4 to 8 miles per hour. We're looking temperatures around 76 degrees. Tonight, we expect things to be partly cloudy with winds about 6 to 12 miles per hour range and in 51 degrees. Tomorrow, we can expect things to be cooler with a few showers. There'll be 8 to 16 miles per hour in the wind, 61 degrees in the day, 43 degrees at night. Tuesday, it'll be mostly sunny, pleasant, and warmer. Winds in the 10 to 20 mile per hour range, 69 degrees high, low of 42. Wednesday, there'll be a morning shower with variable clouds, high of 67, low of 41. And then Thursday, it'll be cool with rain and a thunderstorm. Ooh, that sounds interesting. A high of 59, low of 34. So, you know, chillier, but nothing oppressively cold. Alrighty, let's get right into the headlines from the front page of today's paper. Headline: immigrant who worked at Tyson's Dakota City plant for 37 years succumbs to COVID-19. And the headline being, virus ends American dream. From Dakota City. Whenever Vixenaxi Kunin and his wife, Ho, received a certificate that recognized their quality of work or celebrated one of their milestone anniversaries at the Tyson Fresh Meats plant in Dakota City, the couple would frame and hang it on a white wall in their kitchen near the satellite TV where the 69-year-old Vixenahi Kunin liked to watch Thai and Lao channels. They were pretty proud of where they worked, their daughter, Suzanne Kunin Nguyen of Sioux City, said Thursday by phone. They would get a certificate for every 5-10 years that they had been there. Kunin was born in Laos. He immigrated from the Philippines to the United States with his wife in the early 1980s and built a life in Dakota City. He worked at the beef plant on the production line for 37 years, chasing the American dream. Last month, while an outbreak of the novel coronavirus silently raged at the plant, Kunin developed a cough, then a fever. Less than a week later, Kunin, the father of a son and three daughters, was dead. Quote, he wasn't afraid. He didn't think that was what was going to happen to him, Kunin Nguyen said of her father, who loved to fish, hunt, and spend time with his 13 grandchildren. Health Department officials have not publicly commented on the reason behind a recent spike of COVID-19 cases in Woodbury and Dakota counties. As of Thursday, 669 workers had tested positive, according to a source familiar with the situation who spoke to the journal on the condition of anonymity. That number, which is expected to continue to grow as more test results come back, represents over 15% of the workforce at the 4,300-employee plant and equals over 40% of the total novel coronavirus cases in the two counties. Tyson, which has acknowledged that some workers have tested positive for the virus, but not how many, temporarily halted production at its largest beef plant on Friday. The facility will remain closed through Monday for, quote, deep cleaning. Tyson also said last week it had started testing all of its Dakota City employees. Kunin, who had died on April 24th, was the second of three Tyson workers to succumb to COVID-19. The first was 64-year-old Raimundo Corral of Sioux City. The third, a South Sioux City woman in her 50s or 60s, died on Friday night. Corral continued to report for duty at the sprawling plant despite displaying symptoms. He was never tested before he died at his home on April 18th. Like Corral, Kunin had underlying health conditions, including diabetes. But Kunin Nguyen said her father still did all of the yard work and woke up at 4 a.m. to report to the Tyson plant for his shift, since neither her father nor her mother had any sick leave. Kunin Nguyen said they went to work when they were ill. Quote, they would never take a day off. Their goal was to work hard, buy a house, and they had the four of us, she said of herself and her three siblings. When her father couldn't work due to a doctor's appointment surgery, she said her mother would put in double shifts to make up for his absence. When her father reached age 62, she said he considered retiring, but then decided he needed to keep working. quote, they were told a month or so ago that if they continued to go into work every single day that they were scheduled, at the end of 3 months, they would get hazard pay. So him and my mom continued to go to work, Kunin Nyan said. Kunin Nyan said her father developed a light cough on Sunday, April 19th, but didn't immediately think anything of it. 2 days later, she said her father was running a temperature above 100 degrees. He got up and went to work, but was sent home. When Kunin Nyan talked to her father that Wednesday, the day he was tested for COVID-19, she said he, quote, seemed fine. After her mother returned home from her shift around 1 a.m. Saturday, she found her husband in his recliner. She was unable to wake him up. Kunin Nyan's older sister touched her father's hands, which were, quote, ice cold. She felt him for a pulse, but couldn't detect one. My mom was like, why won't he wake up? Kunin Nyan said. An ambulance crew arrived at the home and just shook their heads, according to Kunin Nyan. She said her mother looked at her sister and asked, why aren't they doing anything to him? My sister said, quote, he's already gone. My mom was just shocked, she said. A 67-year-old Tyson worker, who was an acquaintance of Kunin, tested positive for the virus on April 22nd. A 35-year-old woman who spoke to the Journal on the condition of anonymity to protect her family's safety and privacy said Tyson didn't provide her 67-year-old father with protective gear until recently. Although she said her father, who works in a non-production area, normally doesn't have many people working near him, she said he's in close proximity to other workers who have been, quote, elbow-to-elbow on the production line when he goes on break. She said workers are also within 1 to 2 feet of each other in the locker room. COVID-19 has been around a good month and a half now. I want to say that these masks and these gloves were not provided to them until maybe after Smithfield closed, she said, of a Sioux Falls, South Dakota pork plant that was shut down on April 15th after hundreds of workers there tested positive for COVID-19. Some people have masks hanging on their ears and stuff, but they're not covering their faces, she said, her father told her. The woman said the information her family receives about COVID-19 infection at the plant comes not from Tyson officials, but through, quote, word of mouth from other workers and their family members. I don't want this covered up anymore. I want them to answer to all these families that are affected, to the families who have lost their loved ones, she said, her voice quaking. This is not right. Something has to be done. People can't go to work in fear anymore. Kunin Nyan said her family inadvertently learned that her late father had tested positive for COVID-19 from a news report. On Saturday, April 25th, the Dakota County Health Department, in a statement released to the media, announced that an unidentified Dakota County resident over age 60 had died from COVID-19. That resident was Kunin. Quote, we're like, so then they know he's positive. Nobody told us, recalled Kunin Nyan, who immediately contacted the director of a Sioux City funeral home. Kunin Nyan said the funeral home was pushing to have her father cremated the next day, but she said her family wanted to wait until Monday. They hadn't even had a chance to process that Kunin was gone. She said her family chose her father's urn through an exchange of text messages with the funeral home, a process she said was upsetting. After speaking with her siblings, Kunin and Nyan said they decided to have her father's body transferred to another Sioux City funeral home. When that funeral home went to pick up her father's body, Kunin and Nyan said that the initial funeral home refused to release it. Kunin and Nyan said that she, her mother, siblings, and 21-year-old niece were able to see her father before he was cremated, but they weren't allowed to touch him. Quote, we got the closure we needed, said Kunin and Nyan, who said her family hopes to eventually hold a traditional Buddhist funeral service in memory of her father. Kunin and Nyan said none of her other family members have tested positive for the virus, but her mother's results were still pending as of Thursday. She said a good friend's father, who also works at Tyson, and another woman she knows, who is relatively healthy and in her 30s, are both hospitalized on ventilators, while a friend of her father's, who is currently ill, continues to work at the plant. He, quote, he was like, I've got bills to pay. I've got to go to work. He didn't get his test results back yet, but he is not looking good, Kunin Nyan said. The 35-year-old woman said her father began having symptoms on April 17th, which he attributed to seasonal allergies or a common cold coming on. 2 days later, on Sunday, the woman said her mother called her and asked if she could pick up some cold medicine for her father. He wasn't feeling well and was coughing. After working in the garden that day, the woman said her own allergies were, quote, going haywire, and her body began aching. The following Monday morning, the woman's father reported to work, aware that he had a slight fever. He immediately went to the nurse's station for a temperature check. She said the nurse told them that he needed to go see his doctor, but never told them what his temperature was. She said her father put in a vacation request and then left the plant. He was tested for COVID-19 at a Mercy One urgent care clinic and learned he had the virus that Wednesday. My body aches were coming on stronger, and I started running a fever Monday evening. That's when I knew I had to go get checked as well, said the woman, who tested negative for the virus that Thursday, but was told by her doctor that he was certain that she had it. Quote, he said the testing was not 100% accurate. The woman, who is currently self-isolating at home, said her father had been in bed with extreme fatigue and a fever and is barely eating. He was supposed to return to work next week, but she said she is urging him to retire. She said her brother, who began displaying symptoms a day after her father did, has had a fever and a bad cough. Quote, I have experienced the shortness of breath. It's terrifying. It's the most physically and mentally challenging thing I've ever gone through, she said. My mom's already told me that if she were to get it, she probably won't live through it. That's the fear with my dad, and that's the fear with her. Last Monday, Kuna Nayan accompanied her mother to the plant to pick up her father's last check and to notify the Human Resources Department that her mother was taking a month-long leave of absence. Quote, my mom said, quote, when we get up there, they're going to check our temperature, Kuna Nayan recalled. I walked through the whole thing with my mom and there was no one taking temperatures. That is a fact. Before Tyson announced it would pause production, the 35-year-old woman questioned why the Tyson pork plant in Waterloo, Iowa, had shut down because of COVID-19 outbreak, and that the Dakota City plant had not, or at least gone to half production. She said later that she doesn't think the four-day production pause is sufficient. They need to look out for the workers. These people are not indispensable, as she said. They're going to work to bust their butts off. And people like my dad, who have been there for years on end, they're just treating them like pawns. Alrighty, so that's kind of the human side of this coronavirus impacting Siouxland's largest employer. That's the Dakota City Tyson plant. Headline from front page. Dakota County Tyson worker dies of COVID-19 and Woodbury County records an additional death from South Sioux City. Woodbury and Dakota counties each recorded one new death attributed to COVID-19 on Saturday. The death toll now stands at two in each of the counties. In Woodbury County, the deceased is an older female between the ages of 61 and 80 who died at her home, according to the Siouxland District Health Department. The Dakota County death was an employee at the Tyson Fresh Meats plants in Dakota City. The Dakota County Health Department provided no information on the individual, but a source in South Sioux City told the Journal Saturday that the deceased was a woman in her 50s or 60s who worked at the Tyson plant. She suffered breathing problems due to the virus and died Friday night. Ahmad Mohammed, the Imam of the Islamic Center of Siouxland, wrote in the statement Saturday that the woman was near death by the time she was taken to the hospital. Quote, most of these COVID-19 infected patients are staying home and not going to hospitals unless they are almost unable to breathe. And by the time they go to the hospital, they are near death or almost dead at the spot. This is what actually happened to this dead woman last night, he wrote in a statement. Quote, the COVID-19 positive Somali and Oromo employees of Tyson Foods who are staying home should go to the local hospital emergency rooms as soon as they experience difficulty in breathing so that they can be admitted and can be taken care of this disease. Kevin Creamy, Director of Health for Siouxland District Health, so the department continues to encourage those who are sick to contact their doctors for advice on what to do. Quote, this is very similar to what we have sometimes with the elderly population that exists in the community and also not related to COVID-19. This is overall generally is they don't think it's that bad, so then they stay home. They may not have a support network that's there, and then by the time someone realizes it and intervenes, their health has deteriorated, Creamy said. Creamy added that some individuals have only mild symptoms for a time, then abruptly their symptoms take a turn for the worst. By that point, the chances for an optimal outcome decline. Quote, they're not feeling too bad, they're not too sick, but then they can quickly, for some reason or another, certain ones will, their conditions will decline very quickly, and so there isn't a lot of time for the response, he said. In an email, John Mellon, a Tyson chaplain, expressed his sympathies for the deceased worker in the community. Quote, I am so saddened to hear about the Somali woman who died from the virus, who was a Tyson team member and a member of the Muslim community. My heart is heavy for her family and for anyone who has contracted the virus, especially those who have passed away. I pray regularly for all Tyson team members, including the Somali community, who have been exposed to the virus and need immediate medical care, Mellon wrote. Tyson officials have declined to say how many of its Dakota City workers have taken ill with the virus, but an individual familiar with the situation told the Journal Thursday that some 669 of the workers had tested positive. Meanwhile, in Storm Lake, an undetermined number of Tyson workers have tested positive for COVID-19, spokeswoman Liz Croston confirmed Thursday night. It's not clear which of Tyson's two Storm Lake plants there that these individuals work at. Dakota County Health reported an additional 30 cases of the virus Saturday, bringing the county's virus tally to 972. Woodbury County's virus count went up by 80 and now sits at 1,114, according to Siouxland District Health data. Of Woodbury County's cases, 229 have recovered. A total of 3,296 tests for the virus have been completed in the county, for a positive rate of about 33.7%. It's not known how many have recovered in Dakota County or how many have been tested. Collectively, the two counties have disclosed 2,086 cases of the virus. No other county in the region has reached a level anywhere near Woodbury or Dakota. The closest is Crawford County, which has only 31 confirmed cases. Data from Region 3 of Iowa's Regional Medical Coordination Centers, or RMCC by their acronym, which includes Northwest Iowa, indicates that 29 COVID-19 patients in the region are in the ICU, while 22 are on ventilators as of Saturday. 62 more ventilators are available in the region for new patients. Statewide, Iowa's Department of Health and Human Services recorded another 757 cases, bringing Saturday's tally to 8,641. Of those, 3,156, or about 36.5%, have recovered, and 175 have died. A total of 49,727 individuals have been tested in the state. South Dakota's Department of Health COVID-19 data on Saturday was largely unchanged from the day before. A total of 2,588 cases, of which are reported, the majority of which have reportedly recovered, with only 808 active infections. 21 deaths have been reported in the state, and 71 people in the state are hospitalized. The vast majority of the state's infections, 2,123, are in Minnehaha County. In Nebraska, the Department of Health and Human Services recorded an additional 488 cases of the virus on Saturday, for a new total of 5,326. An additional 3 people died in the state, putting the death toll at 76. The state has tested a total of 31,332. Nebraska has yet to report the number of recoveries in the state. So that's kind of the numbers update. Let us go to North Sioux City. Headline, North Sioux City lockdown extended. Their businesses to remain shut down in May. City Council will revisit the issue. Alrighty. From North Sioux City. The casinos, bars, and sit-down restaurants of North Sioux City will not be welcoming patrons for the time being. The City Council in North Sioux City voted in a special meeting on Wednesday to extend the city's lockdown of public establishments through May, after South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem unveiled a plan to reopen businesses that had closed due to the COVID-19 pandemic. North Sioux City Mayor Randy Fredrickson said in a phone interview with the Journal on Thursday that the city's proximity to Woodbury and Dakota counties, both of which have become significant COVID-19 hotspots, prompted city officials to take action. Quote, the governor kind of left it vague, Fredrickson said, adding that he was, quote, afraid to death of the contagion in neighboring Woodbury and Dakota counties. Taken together, those two counties have more than 2,000 confirmed cases of the virus. North Sioux City leaders early in April put in place an ordinance shutting down public establishments through May 2nd. It forced the closure of the well-known casinos that line, quote, the Strip in North Sioux City. The mayor said he was uneasy with a mass of people who came to North Sioux City establishments after Governor Kim Reynolds declared a health emergency and ordered restaurants and bars to close beginning on St. Patrick's Day. It's a situation he would prefer to avoid for the time being. Quote, Woodbury County was closed down and we got flooded here. I mean, we didn't even know half the people that was in these places, he said. Officials in North Sioux City will review the situation beginning Monday and continuing every Thursday, Fredrickson said. If the numbers start changing, we'll sure look at a different direction, because nobody wants to see all this closed. For Kimberly Lucan, the proprietor of Beano and Sherry's Casino, the Reno 4 Aces, and the Outlaws Casinos in North Sioux City, the uncertainty makes the whole situation even worse. She closed her casinos down in March, and she's braced for the possibility that her establishments will eventually be allowed to reopen with limited capacity or restrictions. Quote, I'm hoping at Monday's City Council meeting they at least give us some point of a guideline to go by, because as a business owner it's really confusing, because you can't prepare to set up if you don't know when you're going to open. You need at least a week or so to get your staffing and food and everything else organized, she said. Alrighty, let's see if we... Oh, okay. Trying to see if we can get the mini editorial for you folks. As I move around the digital version here. Okay. Mini editorial. I forgot to read this. I usually open with this. This is from Deanna Mercure of Sioux City, and her mini editorial writes, the signs used to say, no shirt, no shoes, no service. Now they should read, need a mask to enter. That's mini editorial from Deanna Mercure from Sioux City. Honestly, sounds pretty sensible. It's how the world is changing. Alrighty, let us go into the inside pages and look for more content to bring you. Let's see if we can find some local stories that will help us make more sense of this situation. Let's see here. It just takes a little more time to navigate this than does the physical paper, as you all know by now. I have to load it and click around here and find a relevant article. Alright, and with the Sunday paper, there's just so much more to kind of chew through. Alright, let's turn to page A3. Headline, states testing falls short. Let's see, from Atlanta. As more states begin to relax their coronavirus lockdowns, most are falling short of the minimum levels of testing suggested by the federal government and recommended by a variety of public health researchers, an Associated Press analysis has found. 3 months into an unprecedented public health emergency, the White House has largely resisted calls for a coordinated plan to conduct the millions of tests experts say are needed to contain the virus. What federal officials outlined recently isn't even an official benchmark, and AP's analysis found that a majority of states are not yet meeting it. With no specific guidelines, states are left to figure out what a successful testing program should be while they simultaneously try to reopen their shattered economies. If states don't have robust testing, public health experts say they will be unable to detect outbreaks quickly enough to contain them, which could lead to more shutdowns. Quote, it's dangerous and irresponsible, said Lawrence Gostin, a public health specialist at Georgetown University. In many states, testing has been limited to hospitalized patients, high-risk individuals, and frontline workers. But most public health experts agree that containing the virus will require a massive expansion of testing that eventually includes millions of patients without symptoms, which is not happening now. A testing blueprint released Monday by the Trump administration lacked any metrics state officials could use to make informed decisions. Instead, the document made clear that states are responsible for testing, saying the federal government is the, quote, supplier of last resort. The closest the White House has come to issuing a benchmark does not actually appear in the document. At a recent briefing, senior administration officials said the government would provide each state with enough tests, swabs, and related materials to screen at least 2.6% of their populations in May and June. Those hit harder by the outbreak would be eligible for additional assistance. It was unclear how the 2.6 figure was reached. When asked about it, officials with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services described it as 2% of states' populations per month without explaining the discrepancy. Officials also did not respond to questions about whether the administration has a target for how many daily tests should be done nationwide or when it would issue more details. Only about 40% of states currently meet even the 2% testing threshold, according to the Associated Press's analysis. The percentage is expected to rise as states increase their testing capabilities. The AP based the monthly testing rate for each state on the average number of new daily tests over the most recent 7 days. The data is from the COVID Tracking Project and includes counts up to April 30th. A White House spokesman said Friday that the administration's testing threshold is only a suggestion and that states are ultimately responsible for deciding how to reopen in a safe and responsible manner. The administration says it is working to expand testing and has been highlighting plans first announced in March for additional testing at sites at retail pharmacy chains. States that do not meet the administration's testing guidance based on their current screening rates include some that have been moving into the early stages of reopening, such as Colorado, South Carolina, and Texas. Georgia, which has moved aggressively to ease restrictions and lift the stay-at-home order, is just under the 2% threshold. Louisiana and Kansas, where Republican lawmakers have been putting pressure on Democratic governors to reopen their states, are falling short, according to the Associated Press analysis. In Kansas, the governor and top health administrator expect to reach the 2% mark this month. Former health officials and experts were critical of the testing blueprint and said the 2.6% or 2% population metric was too vague and didn't take into account guidelines from the Centers for Disease Control on who should be tested. Quote, why don't they say, quote, we'll test everybody with any symptoms of coronavirus and all their contacts, said Dr. James Curran, a former assistant U.S. Surgeon General who worked at the CDC for 25 years. Quote, if that amounts to 2%, that's fine. But the guidelines are not to test 2%. The guidelines are to test who needs it. Many experts already say that the national testing rate falls short of what is needed to safely ease social distancing guidelines. Researchers at Harvard have calculated that the United States needs to be testing roughly 500,000 people per day before considering easing restrictions this month. That's nearly 150% increase from the recent daily tally of approximately 200,000 tests. Quote, I've described it, and I still describe it as the absolute bare minimum, says Ashish Jha, director of the Harvard Global Health Institute. More than half of states are not testing their populations at the daily rate recommended by Jha and his colleagues. The Harvard team developed their statistics in mid-April and noted that projections for U.S. cases have increased since then. The virus has killed more than 238,000 people worldwide, including more than 65,000 in the United States, according to a count kept by Johns Hopkins University. Alrighty. Next headline from the regional page. Majority of coronavirus deaths in Nebraska are at nursing homes. From Lincoln, Nebraska. About two-thirds of deaths from the coronavirus in Nebraska have involved residents of long-term care facilities, the governor said. Nebraska has reported 4,838 confirmed cases of COVID-19, the illness caused by the coronavirus, and 73 deaths. The actual number of infections is thought to be far higher than the number of confirmed cases, though, because many people have not been tested, and studies suggest that people can be infected without feeling sick. At least 48 of Nebraska's deaths have involved nursing home residents, the Lincoln Journal Star reported. So the statistics, provided by Governor Pete Ricketts during a news briefing on Friday, were evidence of the dangers that older people face from the virus, especially those dealing with other health conditions. nationally, more than 11,000 nursing home deaths have been linked to COVID-19. For most people, the coronavirus causes mild or moderate symptoms such as fever and a cough that clear up in 2 to 3 weeks. For some, especially older adults and people with existing health problems, it can cause more severe illness, including pneumonia. Statewide restrictions in Nebraska are easing starting on Monday, when restaurants and businesses can reopen and religious gatherings can resume, though social distancing requirements will remain in place. Douglas County Health Director Addy Poor said Friday that the timing for reopening the state was right because hospitals have enough capacity and people are becoming fatigued and starting to stray from all the restrictions, the Omaha World Herald reported. Quote, "We need to be realistic," Poor said. "I think that's what the governor is seeing too." But Poor, speaking at a news conference, expressed concern about churches resuming service. Quote, "My advice would be if you are vulnerable, you are at high risk," Poor said. "There are many other avenues where you can worship, and I would prefer individuals who are elderly, have underlying illnesses, immunocompromised systems, and that those individuals stay at home." Alrighty. Let's see if there's some letters to the editor from the opinion page. Kind of see from local Siouxlanders. Okay. So it looks like we got actually a variety of folks, citizens from the Siouxland area writing. So I want to read from their opinions so we get a sense of the zeitgeist, if you will. First letter is titled, quote, "We need to come together. We need to come together. It really makes you wonder what has happened to Republicans when you hear them defend President Trump for even suggesting that people inject toxic household cleaners into their bodies as a method of combating COVID-19. This man does not represent any of the good qualities of what it is to be a Republican. Donald Trump is the leader of some Republicans, but I always believe this was really just a radical right wing of the political party of my parents, a party I could love and respect even if I disagreed with some of their ideas. I ask myself why these other honorable Republicans are so silent in this era of Trump. What are they afraid of? Why can't they stand up to him and take their party back? I wonder if over time many in the Republican Party have bought into the idea that you can never say a good thing about a Democrat, that we are in a devastating culture war where there can be no compromise, that immigrants seeking a better place to live are nothing but drug mules, that any color of skin that isn't white represents a threat, and that you can't trust civil servants in something called the, quote, deep state. At this time, we need to come together and bring out the best in us for the common good of all. We need Republicans willing to work with Democrats to find solutions better than either party can come up with on their own. Signed, Jerry Eaton of Sioux City. Next letter is titled, "Why No Wind Farm in Woodbury County?" Western Iowa has less hills. The topography of wind-blown soils rise some 200 feet above the central plains. If there was or is enough wind to create such a unique physical variation only present in western Iowa, Missouri, and eastern Nebraska, why doesn't Woodbury County have a wind farm? Numerous counties east of Woodbury County have extensive wind farms. Wouldn't a wind farm benefit both the county and a landowner? Is there some political force at work here? Perhaps a taxation issue depressing the possibility. Signed, George Cox of Hornick, Iowa. Next letter is titled, "Let's Try to Be Positive." Let's try to be positive for everyone's mental health. When I see the numbers for COVID-19 testing, I see more who do not have the virus, i.e. they're negative, than those testing positive. Of those positives, only a small fraction go to the hospital, i.e. those already with pre-existing health issues. Those persons need the extra protections to be safe from the virus. Most of those testing positive have no symptoms or a mild case and can recuperate at home like they do with the flu. Iowa is not New York City, but the media keeps showing what is coming to your town. Let's not live in fear, but take the necessary precautions. Signed, Janet Kruber of Sioux City. Next letter is titled, "Puzzled," and the author writes, "How disappointing to find out Speaker Nancy Pelosi and her party leadership tried to sneak in millions of dollars to Planned Parenthood in the recent coronavirus stimulus bill. Thankfully, the Senate removed that, quote, pork. The battle continued in Iowa when our governor said only life-saving surgery was to be performed. No elective surgery, which included abortions. Planned Parenthood and the ACLU immediately filed a lawsuit saying abortions were not elective surgery. I am puzzled how these groups, during this time when the world is fighting a virus that could kill millions, demand that killing of unborn babies needs to continue. Signed, Roger L. Wilson of Mobile, Iowa. Letter headline, quote, nothing could be worse. The letter writer writes, as I was watching the Daily Dog and Pony show that purports to be a COVID-19 update one recent day, I wondered, why do they ignore that the underserved of this nation, i.e. the poor and people of color, are by far the group most afflicted in the world by this pandemic? Next, I wondered, who is the dispenser-in-chief of fake news? It's President Donald John Trump by a landslide. Lastly, I wondered, why are our Republican colleagues silent about this travesty, enabling Trump to repeat lie after lie, day after day? Who will be the first to summon the courage to inform this emperor that he has no clothes? The longer they allow this behavior, the worse it gets, and the evidence is that each day our number of deaths and new infections as a percentage of the world total increases. Also complicit in this tragedy are corporations who raked in trillions of dollars from the ill-advised capital gains tax cut, the biggest giveaway to the rich in history. Many of our richest corporations paid zero tax last year, and that will continue during these times when projected deficit totals have ballooned to $3.7 trillion. They are offering charity now in this time instead of insisting that the nation change our tax laws that favor the rich and the corporations so that they can actually do some good. A prediction. They will never do that. America can't know how bad this is since the information coming from the White House is mostly fake. Nothing could get worse. Signed, John Shuck of Sioux City. Next one titled, Support Chad Sheehan for Sheriff of Woodbury County. Letter writer writes, Chad Sheehan cares about the mental health of Woodbury County first responders. Chad has shown integrity and a compassionate heart for the citizens of Woodbury County, both throughout Chad's 23-year career in law enforcement and still today. He remains a key member of the Critical Incident Stress Management Team. Chad's involvement with the Critical Incident Stress Management Team for Woodbury County and area first responders has impacted the community in incredibly positive and productive ways. For over 15 years, Chad has volunteered numerous hours making sure our responders are able to work through some very tragic scenes that no one should have to endure alone. The mental health and well-being of all law enforcement officers, fire, rescue, and first responders is always a top priority for Sheehan. During my 45-year career in emergency medical services, Chad's passion and dedication to the mental health of our first responders is unmatched. He continues to volunteer his time and expertise throughout Woodbury County for both urban and rural first responders. Chad Sheehan has been there for our first responders, and now it's time to be there for Chad. Join me in voting Chad Sheehan for Woodbury County Sheriff in the Republican primary on June 2nd. Signed, Jerry Kelly, Woodbury County Paramedic, Woodbury County Emergency Services Unit, and Coordinator of the Siouxland Critical Incident Stress Management Team. Next letter titled One Answer to One Question. Article 1, Section 2 mandates a census be taken every 10 years, a count of the citizens of the United States. Nothing more, just an actual count. Under a ruse by the Census Bureau, we are now bombarded with a plethora of intrusive questions that are not only annoying, but are, quite frankly, none of their business. So when they knock on my door, they will receive one answer to one question. How many people in this household? Just one. Me. Goodbye. Signed, Gerald Pollison of Marcus, Iowa. Letter title, Americans need to, quote, rediscover the value of our freedoms. The letter writer writes, in 2018, 2.85 million Americans died, which doesn't include more than 500,000 abortions performed that year. Amid the current COVID-19 pandemic, where we are obsessed with the daily, quote, body count, it seems that we might want to focus on the epidemic from a different perspective. While the annual death rate is less than 1% of the total population in a given year, and that when this year is passed, we may find that the death rate is effectively unchanged, what about the 99% plus who are still alive? We are familiar with the need to earn a living, but our fixation on death has led to the demise of our ability to do that. Shutting down our country is devastating, while having virtually no statistical effect on the total number of citizens who have died by will have died by the end of the year. Milk and food crops are being destroyed due to lack of ways to process, transport, and sell them to a closed society. Soon, escalating demand will cause a huge spike in prices of essential commodities. Quote, "Give me liberty or give me death" was a rallying cry at the time of the American Revolution. As a result, we are a republic proud of a constitution which contains the Bill of Rights, which has served us well for 230 years. In the matter of a few weeks, we have decided that we have a new mantra. Quote, "Take our liberties and forestall our inevitable deaths." We had better act quickly to rediscover the value of our freedoms before they all vanish in favor of a socialist-communist format towards which we are now headed. Signed, Lon Zimmerman of Sergeant Bluff, Iowa. Next letter written, "Changes needed to ensure our health and safety." The letter writer writes, "There are lots of suspicions about how and where the coronavirus pandemic that originated in Wuhan, China began. Did it escape from a state-run lab? Did it spread through a local market? Parentheses note, you can't believe anything coming from the Communist Party of China. For years, there have been warnings that conditions at both the Wuhan Institute of Virology and China's, quote, wet markets were unsafe and could release a deadly pathogen into the world. And yet your tax dollars were being spent at both. What is the so-called wet market, you ask? Well, it's where living animals, including cats and dogs, are bought, sold, and butchered for human consumption in unsanitary conditions. And despite the worldwide pandemic that has ensued, these wet markets remain open for business in communist China. Nearly two decades ago, SARS was believed to have made the leap from animals to humans at a wet market in China. And ever since, scientists have been warning that another, far more virulent, virus could be transmitted from wildlife to humans if these wet markets were not shut down. The communist nation's rules for these repulsive markets, of course, are lax and often unenforced or ignored. Live rats, snakes, and other wildlife, including the animals that were the source of SARS, and even recycled lab animals that had been used as subjects by Chinese researchers, have been reported as being bought and sold for food at these markets. And yet, like most pharmaceuticals, medicines we routinely swallow every day come from places like India and China. Let your legislators know that we want changes that will ensure our health and safety." Signed, Ken Johnson of Sioux City. Next headline, next letter titled, "A Total Lack of Respect." It seems to me that the whole problem with the best president of the United States and his administration is a total lack of respect for the rest of us. Case in point, when Vice President Mike Pence visited the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota on Tuesday, he chose not to wear a face mask covering his mouth and nose. He chose to disregard the hospital policy that his staff was informed of before his visit. When asked about it, he responded by saying that he wanted to be able to look people in the eye. "I do not know about the mask he wears or even if he has one, but mine does not cover my eyes and prevent eye contact with other people." What is really scary about this is that as the head of the task force to oversee the coronavirus, he apparently does not know that there is a 15% false negative result for the test, or that just because you are tested negative one day doesn't mean you can't become positive any time before you take the next test, unless you choose to live in quarantine. Would it hurt the best president of the United States and his administration to show the rest of us some respect? Signed, Joe Dillinger of Sioux City. So, those are the letters to the editor of a variety of opinions of Siouxlanders on a variety of topics. You know, some liberal, some conservative, some, you know, really nothing, probably neither liberal or conservative, just maybe something in between that defies categorization. And, you know, it's, I think it's always good in a democracy to know what people's opinions are and what other people think, whether you agree or disagree, especially in times as strange and as different as the ones that we're living in. Alrighty, let us go to the obituaries today. First one, Linda R. Lander of Galveston, Texas, formerly of Onawa, Iowa. Linda Ray Lander, 77, of Galveston, formerly of Onawa, passed away peacefully on April 27th at home after a brief illness. A celebration of life will be held in Onawa, Iowa, late this summer at a date yet to be determined. Linda was born on November 5th, 1942 in Hornick. She spent her childhood in Ottawa and married Benjamin Lander in 1959. Linda worked at IBP as a key punch operator after she and the girls moved to Homer, Nebraska in 1969. Linda yearned to see the country and expand her horizons, so she moved to Salem, Oregon in 1980 and began working for Winco Foods, where she subsequently met her soulmate, Lee Goss. Linda and Lee loved the outdoors and spent time camping, fishing, going to the coast, or working in the garden. They then moved to Idaho for a few years, and after retirement, on to Texas to be closer to her daughters. In 2007, they moved to Ottawa to be nearer to her siblings and classmates. Winters were spent in Lake Havasu, Arizona, where they enjoyed time spent with the many friends they met, going to the doggy park, playing pickleball, and especially taking trips to Las Vegas. After losing Lee, Linda moved to Galveston and made friends quickly at her independent living facility, enjoyed the warmer weather, walks on the beach, and spending time with family. Next, Stanley D. Kurtenbach. Stanley D. Kurtenbach of Santa Monica, California, formerly of Sioux City. Stanley David Kurtenbach, 63, of Santa Monica, formerly of Sioux City, passed away unexpectedly on April 27th from heart failure. Stan was a larger-than-life personality, born and raised in Chicago, Illinois. He moved to Sioux City in 1972, attended Helan High School, and graduated in 1974. After high school, he enlisted in the U.S. Navy. He then attended Santa Monica College in California. He remained living and working in California until the time of his death. Stan loved the outdoors and fitness, including skiing, the beach, camping, working out, and traveling the country. He was passionate about family and attended every family gathering he could, by whatever means it required. Next, Gerald Jerry Dunn of Marcus, Iowa, 89, died Friday, May 1st. Graveside service will be May 8th at 11 a.m. at Trinity Lutheran Cemetery in Marcus. Visitation that will be limited to 10 people with social distancing will be May 7th from 5 to 7 p.m. Greenwood Schubert Funeral Home in Marcus. Next, Steve M. Counterman. Stephen M. Steve Counterman of Sioux City, 78, passed away at home on Monday, April 27th, after a lengthy illness. Steve had been lovingly cared for by his wife, Karen, for the past several years of his illness. Due to COVID-19, private funeral services will be held with immediate family at Memorial Park Cemetery, with Pastor Martha Anderson of Trimble United Methodist Church officiating. Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel is in charge of the arrangements. Steve was born on June 20, 1941, to Carl and Bernice Counterman. He attended Sioux City schools and graduated from Riverside High School. At 17 years of age, Steve met the love of his life, 15-year-old Karen Louise Clausen. Steve and Karen were married on September 20, 1963 at Trimble United Methodist Church in Sioux City. To this union, three daughters were born. Their oldest daughter, Kimberly, was born on May 14, 1966. Twin daughters, Kelly and Christine, were born on the same day, 2 years later, May 14, 1968. Earlier in their marriage, Steve enlisted in the Iowa Army National Guard, where he served for 6 years. Steve worked for 40 years in the Parks and Recreations Department with the City of Sioux City. He was a proud AFSCME, or its American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees member. Steve retired from the City of Sioux City in 2003. Steve is a longtime member of Trimble United Methodist Church, in which he was very active, serving as a trustee, Sunday school teacher, usher, and helping with maintenance around the church. Steve was very active in his daughter's activities as a softball coach, youth basketball coach, and attended all of their sporting, drill team, and school events. Steve and Karen were involved in the Cirque Square Dance Club, camping, the church, youth group, traveling, and Steve enjoyed bowling league, woodworking, golfing, and reading. 16 years ago, Steve and Karen parked their camper in a seasonal campground at Lake Okoboji. There, the couple enjoyed many summer days with their family making memories. He loved any family gathering. As grandchildren came along, Steve especially enjoyed attending their many activities and school programs. Watching his grandchildren play softball, volleyball, soccer, and dance kept him busy. Larry Sexton of Mayer, Arizona, formerly of Sioux City. Larry Sexton, 80, formerly Sioux City, passed away peacefully on March 9th at the Veterans Administration Hospital in Prescott, Arizona, after a long battle with cancer. The Little Sioux Township Cemetery in Smithfield, Iowa, is Larry's final resting place. Larry was born on June 25th, 1939, to Everett and Itha Sexton. Larry assisted his father with a thriving bee business and later entered the United States Air Force. He was honorably discharged from the Air Force as an E-5 buck sergeant with 2 good conduct medals. He went on to be a heavy equipment operator and tile worker. He retired to Mayer, where he enjoyed riding four-wheelers with friends, telling jokes, and living a peaceful life. He will truly be missed by friends, family, and all that knew him. Next, Roberta A. Elliott. Roberta A. Elliott of Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, formerly of Sioux City. Roberta Ann Elliott, 87, Coeur d'Alene Lake, formerly of Sioux City, died peacefully in her sleep on April 4th. Due to current circumstances, a celebration of mom's life will take place at a safe time in the future. Roberta was born on May 23, 1932 in Sioux City, the only daughter of Dr. Max E. and Helen Ranking. She was devoted to her older brothers, Richard and Jack. She attended Sioux City Public Schools and graduated from Central High School in 1950. Roberta married Nick Elliott in July of 1950. They had 4 children, Cindy, Skip, Dan, and Peter. Skip died in November of 2019. Nick and Roberta retired to their home in Coeur d'Alene Lake and enjoyed 24 years there until Nick's death in 2011. Roberta was able to enjoy 5 more years at Mica Bay, actively involved with her many friends around the lake at Mica Grange, her bridge group, and close friends from the WOMB, or Women of Mica Bay group. Next, Donald M. Molstad. H. Molstad of Hinton, Iowa. Donald H. Molstad, 71, of rural Hinton, passed away on April 20th. The family will hold a memorial service at a later date. Online condolences may be directed to MeyerBrosChapels.com. Don was born on March 25, 1949, to Howard and Ella Mary Davis Molstad in Sioux City, Iowa. He was the 4th generation to grow up on the Molstad family farm in Mobile, Iowa. After high school, Don miraculously survived an electrical accident. The accident changed Don's life path in many ways, a path that led him to the love of his life and wife of nearly 49 years, Sheila Bagan, B-A-G-A-N. He graduated from the University of South Dakota in 1972, then Creighton Law School in 1975. After law school, Don and Sheila moved to Sioux City, where Don started a successful law practice and was a United States bankruptcy trustee for almost 41 years. His loyal office staff will always be considered part of the family. Don and Sheila were blessed with 2 children, Eric and Nora. One of the biggest joys in Don's life was being able to take his children fishing. There are fishermen, and then there is Don Molstad. He continued to hone his craft over years of fishing in Canada and on the family pond. Always a teacher, Don passed his love and wisdom of fishing on to his grandchildren. Farming was not part of Don's original plan, but as fate would have it, he got back into the family business. Don was always early to rise to do chores or rushing home over lunch to check on new baby calves. His work ethic was unmatched. Over the years, Don built a network of friends through work, singing with the Blessed Sacrament Celebration Choir, Bridge Club, tennis, and fishing trips. Don always enjoyed great conversation, especially about farming, fishing, and family. Don was a great attorney, an excellent fisherman, a loving husband, the best father, and papa to his 3 biggest loves, Mackenzie, Gunner, and Patrick. Alrighty, let us go on to the next page of obituaries, and that might probably finish out our time here together. So let's see, a lot of stuff to read. Let's see here, it's formatted a little differently here. Alright, first, in the next page, Dudley D. Cool, K-O-O-L. Dudley D. Cool, 89, of Sioux City, passed away on Wednesday, April 29th at a local care facility. A private family burial will be held at Memorial Park Cemetery. Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel is handling arrangements. Online condolences may be directed to MeyerBrosChapels.com. Dudley was born on October 15, 1930, in George, Iowa, son of Tom and Rita Schneider Cool. He graduated high school from Orange City in 1948 and attended Northwestern College. He went on to attend Sioux Empire College in Hawarden, Iowa, earning an associate's degree. He joined the 185th Air National Guard, retiring in 1986 after serving for 38 years. He married Marge Schmoller in 1955 in Granville, Iowa. His hobbies included his motorcycles, boats, and 4 o'clock. He was a member of the Fraternal Order of Eagles, the Boys of 68, as well as the Missouri River Boat Club. So I think that's it for the obituaries. You know, one thing I like to read about that is everyone has a story. You know, each of these lives that, you know, they're not just another name and a date that was born and a death, but, you know, each of those people had a story, a journey, and people, friends and family, and lives they impacted, and things and lessons they learned and lessons they gave to other people, and, you know, and people they helped and all that, and, you know, children they raised. So, you know, it's kind of, I like, you know, kind of reading about people's stories and, you know, and how they lived it, where they lived, what they did, what their hobbies were. I think it's always so neat. And, Mark, of course, my condolences go on to those that I've lost. Our time is about ending together here at Iris. So let's go back to the weather forecast. You know, as you may have probably felt, and this is the warmer sunny day. It'll be sunny to partly cloudy and warmer, a high of looking at 76. But, you know, as befits the Midwest, we're looking for those big temperature swings here in the spring. So it'll be 51 tonight, partly cloudy. Tomorrow will be cooler with a few showers, high of 61, low of 43 at night. Tuesday, it'll be mostly sunny, pleasant and warmer, 69 the day, 42. So we kind of got going back and forth here. Mother Nature can't make up her mind, it looks like. On Wednesday, it'll be morning shower, variable clouds, 67 the day, 41 degrees at night. Thursday, it'll be cool with rain and a thunderstorm, 59 degrees in the day, low of 34 at night. So, my friends, that brings us to the end of Sunday, May 3rd, 2020, of the Sioux City Journal for Iris. Your reader today has been Trevor Brass. I'm pleased to bring you the news here from my home. And thankfully, my dog didn't get upset about any cats walking by, so he was pretty good. So Seth was a good boy. He's a border collie. You may have heard him in the background, and my cats didn't cause any drama, so I'm grateful for that. So we thank you, our listeners, for listening to Iris, and as we deal with this strange time, as we try to adapt to a new way of life for the foreseeable future, I wish you nothing but good health to you and yours, and please do what you can to take care of each other. Goodbye, and have a wonderful Sunday.